Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
By the way, what happened to the Cardinals over the weekend? Dave Klein, wasn't it just like last week where I was claiming that this was a pretty good baseball team and there's some good things happening, and they come back, they win that game on, what was it, Tuesday against the Royals or Wednesday? And then they dropped the, well, it was Tuesday, then they dropped the doubleheader and proceeded to lose most of the games against Cleveland. Was it just me, or did things kind of, did the wheels come off over the weekend?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, with the exception of Adam Wainwright, it really wasn't a good week.
How about that yesterday? Complete game victory on his 39th birthday over the baseball team from Cleveland, as they'll be referred to from now on. Ricky Horton's going to join me at 3:35 this afternoon. We have some new task force numbers from Dr. Alexander Garza this afternoon, plus an audio cut of the day as well. And you know, one of the questions that I've had, and I think a lot of people have had, if you've noticed, the stock market is just rocking right now. We're in a pandemic and a recession. Why is that? Dave Simon, certified financial planner, senior VP of investments at UBS Financial Services, and the host of our own Dollars and Cents show, is going to join me at 4:20 this afternoon. So I tweeted something out a week ago about teaching my daughter Alexa. I have a five-year-old little girl named Alexa, kindergarten, and somebody responded to me on Twitter with a request to sign a petition to change the name Alexa on the Amazon devices. It's funny because we named our daughter Alexa, obviously. It was 5 years ago in March, and that was before this device came out. I remember a couple of years later, I was at the Roots and Blues Music Festival. I think she was like two at the time in Columbia, Missouri, and I was saying her name, and there was another little kid that said, "I have a robot named Alexa." And of course, I knew what the kid meant right away. Now, the person who reached out to me is with me this afternoon, Lauren Johnson, who's heading a movement to get Amazon to accept that Alexa is human and change the name of the device. I don't know how much luck we're going to have with that, but I think to a certain extent, it's a legitimate issue. Lauren, how are you?
Good, thank you. How are you? Yes, it is a
so your name. Your name is not Alexa. So do you? How did this all start for you?
So this all started, I have a daughter also, her name is Alexa, and she is eight, actually almost nine. And, when this first came out, the Amazon Alexa device, it really wasn't that big of a deal. We had jokes here and there, and, you know, even my own family, and it really wasn't a big deal until she started getting harassed and bullied at school and on the bus. There were a lot of comments like, "Alexa, bark," "Alexa, do my homework." And even still, my husband and I said, you know what, let's just try and build some resiliency here. Let's just, you know, we said to her, go back to the kids and say, "I don't like it when you say that," or ignore them. You know, wherever the situation takes you, let's just address it, because that's more of our parenting style. Where it became unavoidable is when we started going out anywhere in public, whether it be a Target store or a restaurant, and we started getting jokes and mocking from complete strangers, from adults whom we had never met, and then, of course, adults we knew. And then when we started sending her on play dates to kids' houses, things just sort of escalated from there. And so that's why I originally started the website, which is called Alexa as a Human. And I started looking into this a little bit and then joined social media. And that's when the flood of other people, women named Alexa, and parents with similar issues started chiming in.
So, look, and I've never thought about it, and I want to talk about the bullying a little bit because, you know, on the website, you offer a fair amount of examples from kids who've been bullied. I've never thought about that because my daughter, maybe there's been some light teasing or someone, or someone's referred to. I mean, the thing that happens to us a lot, and you can relate with this, if you're in someone's house and you say your daughter's name, or if I'm even on the phone with someone, they have it on speaker, and they have their device in the background, it starts going off. I was in Las Vegas a few weeks ago with my friend Rick and talking about my daughter, and he's got, you know, his device in there, so it started going off. So it's mainly been funny, you know, little funny things that have happened. I'm not familiar with anything where this little five-year-old girl is bullied, but you're saying that has happened to kids?
Yeah, unfortunately, yes. And, you know, we were wondering when this first started if it was just us. And I thought, okay, you know, am I being overly sensitive? And I live in the Northeast. I come from the land of cynics and sarcasm. It's what we do. It's who I am. So I thought, okay, get a grip. This is not a big deal. But yeah, all of a sudden, then I started getting women who are reaching out to me who have decided to change their names. They're being sexually harassed at work. They're also being harassed at work. And, you know, people are saying that their name is annoying. I have teenagers that are in high school and young women in college that are reaching out, letting me know they've been sexually harassed by this. People are sort of giving them this gives them almost a license to say things to these women, which is completely inappropriate. And I also have parents who are reaching out who are in tears constantly because they've had to change their child's name, most especially 3- and 4-year-olds. I had a couple of 4-year-olds last year who reached out around Christmas time. They had gone to see Santa, and Santa was so busy mocking their name that they forgot to ask the child what they wanted for Christmas. There's just, so many stories out there that, you know, you can imagine what it's like and how damaging this can be. I mean, we've consolidated literally hundreds of stories thus far of consequences of Amazon's decision to anthropomorphize their device with a human name. I mean, this, and like I said, it ranges from irritating jokes to, you know, teachers, if you can believe it, to full-blown sexual harassment. You know, and some, for some, it's funny, and for others, impacted by it without hope of escaping its effect. There have been legal name changes, depression, threats of lawsuits, and even suicidal ideation. So we had two people in the last month or so that reached out. Both happened to be from the UK because this is a worldwide issue. You know, there are 130,000 girls and women in the US named Alexa, but, you know, it's not just the US. And we had one 12-year-old who had now has developed severe anxiety and in therapy because the bullying that happened to her was so bad. And then a 13-year-old who had suicidal thoughts, and her parents, you know, regretfully almost felt forced to make the decision to change her name at 13 and switch schools. Because she locked herself in the closet all night and basically, you know, had suicidal thoughts. So, yeah, it's become a real problem. And like I said, if I weren't living this, I'd be like, get a grip. This is ridiculous. And it seems superficial. But unfortunately, if you spend 5 or 10 minutes to look into this, it's a big deal. And I mean, obviously Amazon's one of the largest companies in the world. And while the Alexa device is, you know, looking to make $18-19 billion a year $18-19 billion by next year. I mean, this Alexa is probably 5% of their revenue. So, you know, I think, you know, people say, oh, it's impossible to rebrand. I do think it's possible. Me personally, I work in a completely different industry. This is all new to me. I worked in the pharmaceutical industry for 16 years, and we're constantly rebranding. And if there's something different with a medication, everything needs to be completely destroyed and all marketing pieces are, you know, created brand new. So I do think it's possible. But not without a lot of work and not without Amazon really seeing what's happening to children. I mean, yeah. This is, you know,
I guess my standpoint on this, Lauren, has been I've been more annoyed by it than anything else, just because when it happened, we're like, man, you know, you spend so much time picking a name, and then we sort of have laughed about it. And in the back of my mind, I guess I've thought that this just can't go on forever, that, you know, that eventually there's going to be something that replaces this. And I know that you can change the name. I think you can, you know, adjust it. For example, if we don't have one of those devices, if we did, we could call it, I think there's the ability to call it something else. But I mean, to have something get on the radar of Amazon for them to actually take action seems like a bit of a stretch. Have you gotten any kind of response from Mr. Bezos?
Not from him himself. I would imagine he has to have a team of lawyers to respond to every email, especially with this type of subject. So we haven't yet. But honestly, I'm positive that there's going to be change. It's just a matter of when, because I think if you look at the ethics here, it's just, I mean, in 2020, as chaotic as 2020 has been, you know, how can this be possible that they still, a name is synonymous with a servant? And, you know, what I say to people is if we had named our daughter Alexa, if we had named her servant, people would think we were absolutely crazy. And yet Amazon has done this for us, and somehow that's okay. So, you know, we're not looking for any financial gain from this whatsoever. And I am behind the technology 100%. And there's a large group of people that I work with. So it's not just me alone. I just happen to be the one who's not too nervous to do an interview. But
you're the troublemaker.
You know, there's a lot of, I guess I am. But, you know, I'm encouraged by this, by all the people that want to change and how many children and women have had, you know, issues and, you know, real damaging stories around this. So, you know, I do think it's possible. It's just going to take a lot of work.
Well, I'll be curious to see what happens. I know, I guess, again, in the back of my mind, I thought, oh, maybe this is just going to wear out, but we'll see what happens. The website is alexaishuman.com. Alexa
yep.
is a human. I'm sorry, is a human. Alexaishuman.com.
Yep.
Lauren, thanks for coming on here. Keep me posted, okay?
I will. Thank you so very much.
Take care. That's Lauren Johnson with us. Look, I've never thought about it in serious terms because we've joked about it so often, but it is annoying. It really is. And I don't think my daughter's been, well, I know she hasn't been bullied, but, you know, she'll get a comment every once in a while about the device. I don't know. I just don't know why they did it. Maybe I should look into the research of why they decided to name it that, because obviously there had to be something to it, just with something that was easy for people to say. I mean, if you name it something else, then you have more conflicts with a popular name. They had to pick a name that wasn't super popular, if it was John or Mike or something like that, although kids aren't really named John or Mike anymore, or Mark, thank God. Those are boring names anyway. 316 at the Voice of St. Louis. We'll come back. Man, I'll tell you what, I got to talk to Dan Reardon. Can't let him off the hook after that amazing BMW championship and the FedEx championship continues. He's going to join us a little bit next year on KMOX. At the bottom of the hour, we'll be joined by Dr. Garza, today's briefing of the St. Louis Metropolitan Pandemic Task Force, and Ricky Horton. After that, we'll talk about Adam Wainwright and the Cardinals right now and where we're heading as we, you know, the Cardinals had a bit of a rough stretch, but they can turn it around this week. They got a bunch of doubleheaders coming up next week and into the rest of September. We'll talk with Ricky at 3:35 on KMOX.
You're listening to The Mark Reardon Show.
When you're out of my sight, you must constantly Twitter me exactly what you're up to.
Follow Mark on Twitter at Mark Reardon, KMOX.
Dave Klein is back in the studio. Dave, let's play play this John Thompson bite before we get to Dan Reardon here this afternoon. I was thinking about these coaches that we've lost, unfortunately, in the past few months. These are the coaches that I grew up with. John Thompson passed away. Lute Olson died last week. We had Lou Henson that passed away. That gets me thinking about the legendary Norm Stewart, who was on my show when Lou passed away, because we wanted to give him the proper respect. But, man, these coaches, and, you know, Coach Stewart's getting up there as well. They were certainly unique in the day. They just don't make them like that anymore for a variety of reasons. You know, we have different rules now and everyone's woke, but it was a great era in college basketball. And I never met John Thompson. I met his son when he was a coach, but let's play a little bit about his recruiting process.
Recruiting is a difficult issue for everybody. I mean, as the FBI is finding out right now, you know, it's difficult, more difficult for an honest coach than it is for a dishonest coach, because of the fact that people will ask you why you didn't get a player if you didn't cheat. They will ask you why you didn't win ball games when people who cheated won the game. They will ask you why you don't get into the Hall of Fame when people who cheated go into the Hall of Fame.
So why are so many acting like this is a new problem for which they are going to somehow find new solutions?
Well, when you find out, ask me, tell me. You know, they belong to the Lighthouse for the Blind. I mean, no disrespect to the blind. But everybody in college basketball can tell you the people who they think are violating rules. To act now like this is something new is absolutely hypocritical.
Yeah, that was from a broadcast of HBO Real Sports from the past. This is an interesting story. John Ziegler, who is my friend, who has been on the show many times, he's a talk show host, columnist, he tweeted this out. I retweeted this a while ago. He said, very few people know it. I don't think I had known this, or if I had, I'd forgotten. John Thompson smartly had Dikembe Mutombo sit out his first year at Georgetown so he could learn English, etc. That meant that Mutombo, who was 7'2", played intramural hoops as a freshman, and Mr. Ziegler said that he refereed his first game, and it was probably the most memorable moment of his college life. How cool of a story is that? And speaking of cool stories, that'll make a nice segue into what happened at the BMW Championship yesterday. What a tournament, Dan Reardon. I had to have you back because it was amazing, that finish yesterday. John Rahm was my pick for the PGA Championship, so I was off just by a couple of weeks.
Yeah, you know, Mark, and I don't know if you'll agree with this, and I realize I'm prejudiced, but I think of all the sports that have restarted this summer, I think golf has had the best run. You know, yesterday, obviously, the Rahm DJ thing going into overtime was the case, but Morikawa at the PGA was certainly a headline moment. And you actually have to go back to Morikawa and Justin Thomas at Muirfield Village when they threw the same bombs at each other. So I think they've had this great run of magic moments and good moments in between. And the important thing for golf is they've done this all without Tiger. He's been in the field, but he's not been a draw in that regard. And so yesterday, like I said, it continues that. And keep in mind, we have the Tour Championship next week. We still have the U.S. Open, and we still have the Masters coming up. So golf still has a few shots to be fired.
Absolutely, and it was exciting over the weekend. So Dustin Johnson, it was a tight field, a real tough golf course. The numbers were really being kept in check. So even if you were plus one, plus two, plus three, you had a shot. Dustin Johnson puts a 45-foot, seemingly impossible birdie putt down the right edge of the ridge, and it funnels down perfectly, forces a playoff. And then John Rahm, and you were probably watching this, Dan. I mean, that crew at NBC was writing him off, basically. He'd be lucky if he double bogeys this. He has a longer putt, 66 foot, 5 inches, 90-degree angle. He kind of gets it on the ridge. It basically feeds down. It's that magical moment that those of us who play golf hopes happens, and it happened, and he wins this tournament. Really, really fun. I think even Dustin Johnson had a chuckle at that just a little bit, even though it cost him a couple million dollars.
Well, you know, and this is silly to say, Mark, but I'm wondering under the circumstances that if a player, you're right, they talked about a three putt being a good performance by Rahm on that green. I'm wondering if the players in that circumstance, if their focus doesn't become so great, if their examination of hitting a specific spot, and in this case it was the crest of the hill, I'm wondering if their focus goes up enough, because we've seen this, like I said, we can go back, like I said, the same thing occurred with Justin Thomas and Morikawa at Muirfield Village. I just wonder if the player's concentration goes up enough to make it. It's not an aberration in the sense that it does happen, but I sure think they will these things in. If you watch Dustin Johnson survey his putt to try to get into the playoff, he examined almost every inch of that putt before he stroked it. And the end result, as you said, is just magical. And even yesterday, there were a few people around the gallery, so they even had a little bit of a reaction.
All right, so Dan, how does this, and I should know this, but let's talk about this weekend. So Dustin Johnson is the favorite. He's still the number one golfer in the world. He's ranked number one. John Rahm is second, according to the odds makers. Justin Thomas, third. Webb Simpson, fourth. If Dustin Johnson does not win this tournament, can he still win the Tour Championship based on points, or does that all go out the window and it's the winner of this tournament?
He starts at 10 under par if he maintains that all the way to the end. My understanding is he wins the championship. The NBC was using the terminology a staggered start. And one of the ironies about yesterday is it made no difference to Dustin Johnson whether he won the playoff or not, because it didn't change his position in the Tour Championship. And I think that's a little bit of a weakness in the FedEx system, because it should matter if you win the tournament. You know, I go back to St. Louis when we hosted BMW, and Vijay Singh had already won the bonus in FedEx. So I'm not quite sure that I'm right about that. I think if you win the tournament and you're far enough back, you don't have the points, you don't win the tour, you don't win the FedEx thing. I think you win the Tour Championship, but you don't get the FedEx bonus. But you know, like I said, in Dustin's case, yes, he would like to have had that championship at Olympia Fields, and yes, he would like the winner's cut of the purse. But it didn't change his circumstance. He was playing for just that day, and I think that's what golf should really be about. And in Rahm's case, what did it do? It moved him up one spot and moved Justin Thomas back one spot. So in terms of this coming weekend in Atlanta, nothing really changed except at the back of the field. But at the top of the field, nothing really changed. And then, as I said, they start with a staggered lead.
I forgot about that, Dan. So, yeah, DJ starts at 10 under, John Rahm at 8 under, Justin Thomas 7 under, Webb Simpson 6 under, Colin Morikawa at 5 under, 4 under is Daniel Berger, Harris English, Bryson DeChambeau, Sungjae Im, Hideki Matsuyama, and then the list goes on from there. I mean, you got Rory at 3 under, Patrick Reed 3 under. I mean, if you can come back from even and win this thing, that would be quite an accomplishment, but I also think very unlikely. Dan, I got to let you go. We have a pandemic task force update coming up here. It's going to be fun. We'll get a preview on Wednesday or Thursday, and we'll talk then. Thank you, Dan Reardon.
Enjoyed it, Mark.
3:30, we got the task force update coming up next.
News Radio 1120, KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
A lot of trade action going on this afternoon. Nothing that I can tell that involves the Cardinals. They're in Cincinnati tonight. We're out a little early at about 4:40, about an hour from now for the pregame. Rick Horton is with me. I think he's at the booth right now, but not in Cincinnati. How's that going, by the way, on remote location? You okay with this so far?
It's actually been a lot better than I thought, Mark. I mean, really surprisingly so. At first I thought, well, how do you get the feel of being in the ballpark? But they've got two large screen TVs in front of both John and I, and we just find a way to make it work. And, of course, the bottom line is you're just happy to be talking about baseball, and so I think that's part of it.
Well, up until about last Wednesday, I was thrilled to be talking about baseball. I was all excited, telling friends from around the country, don't give up on the Cardinals. Then they come back in that game on Tuesday night against the Royals, and you know, then Wednesday, they dropped the doubleheader to the Pirates. I'm thinking, you know what? They won that game against the Royals, but then things didn't go very well the rest of the weekend. Now, mind you, the Indians are a pretty darn good team, aren't they?
They are, but they lost a doubleheader to the Pirates, who are not a good team this year. They're rebuilding.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're going to have some ebbs and flows. You just can't have kind of the ebbs take too long when you're talking about a 58-game schedule. And the Cardinals certainly had some clunkers during this homestand. And the big loss to the Indians, the 20-hit game, was, you know, that's painful. But I think more painful was the loss on Saturday when the base running wasn't good. You know, defense hasn't been great the last week either. But I guess you got to ride the high of what Adam Wainwright did yesterday. Was just unbelievable, celebrating, Mark, as you know, his 39th birthday yesterday and pitching a complete game, which, you know, you're going to have to gather the kids around and explain what a complete game is because there aren't many anymore. But it was a phenomenal performance. I couldn't believe he kept going out. Inning after inning, Mike Schilt believed in him, and he came through.
Okay, but it's one thing to do that, but he basically called his shots on this too. He told the bullpen, look, I got this, right?
He did. He actually mentioned after the game on our interview that we had with him that he sent a text to the players the day before. He said, bring your best energy because I'm going to bring mine, and I want this to be a special day. I mean, that's interesting that he actually texted everybody, a group text on his team, to have him ready for this start. So it's almost like he had a premonition that something big was going to happen. And, you know, talk about celebrating your birthday in grand style. He did that yesterday. And the Cardinals needed that. They needed to have their bullpen have a day off or two. Wouldn't hurt. Because, you know, the double headers are part of it, but not having many off days is another part of it. Cardinals will have 8 games in 8 days on this road trip. There's only 2 road trips and 2 homestands left in the regular season. It's amazing to say that, but it's a fact. And the Cardinals still have 7 double headers ahead. So you've got to keep the bullpen as strong as possible.
Where do we have to be here with, I don't know if anyone's handicapped this yet, with the record or the standings to make the playoffs? I mean, basically 30 teams make the playoffs. Isn't that something like that? Okay, 16.
It's actually, there's 30 teams and 8 teams in each league. And what they'll do is they'll take the first place team and the second place team in each division. So there's 6 in each league, and then 2 wild cards beyond that. And then you get seeded, so 1 plays 8, 2 plays 7, et cetera, and you start out with a 3-game series. So the reality is if you're in second place, which is where the Cardinals are right now, you're in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So there'll be 7 – Mark, if you handicapped it as of today, there would be several teams that would be in the playoffs with less than 500 records. Now, you know, that's not what you want. You want the better seed, but that's the way the playoffs are this crazy season.
What have you seen today as far as the you know, the trade activity and who might have benefited? Did Lance Lynn get traded or not?
He did not. At the last minute, apparently, Texas pulled him back out. There was a lot of conversation about him going to the Dodgers. But several huge names, Jonathan Villar, Starling Marte, of course, Trevor Rosenthal happened earlier this week, Taiwan Walker, Robbie Ray, Mike Clevenger, all those guys have different teams today, and I only – put down half of the ones that I heard about. So the reality is there are a lot of moves today and a lot of teams saying, look, we've got a chance here. I think a lot of buyers, several teams are thinking, boy, if I can get into the playoffs, because so many teams are into the playoffs, and maybe get to that second round, it'll be worth it to maybe mortgage some of our minor leaguers. The odd thing about the trades is your minor leaguers are, you know, what are they doing? They're not playing unless they happen to be somebody that's already on the roster. So I think it's limited the ability to make moves somewhat.
Man, the Padres are trying to win a World Series, aren't they?
They are.
You know, I saw an article today, Rick, you know, even with as good as the Dodgers are, but you mentioned those 3-game series. If the you know, sometimes you're not suited for the 3-game series, and the Padres probably know that about the Dodgers right now.
Well, I think if you ask the Padres, are you as good as the Dodgers right now, they might say no. But the fact is, if the Padres finish with a good record, they're not playing the Dodgers in the first. They're playing somebody else.
Yeah.
So the Dodgers could get beat by somebody. I mean,
right.
Theoretically, the Cardinals, I mean, I think it's very – I mean, I could say very possible, but it's possible. Cardinals play the Dodgers in the first round. And, you know, you get a Jack Flaherty that has a great game, and Adam Wainwright comes and does something beyond what we expect him to do, which is par for the course for him. And all of a sudden, that series is over. Well, that team that you were trailing in your division isn't even in the playoffs anymore. So I think there's a lot of reason for optimism in San Diego, and they're just rolling the dice right now.
So, you know, like a lot of fans, sometimes when the Cardinals aren't playing at their best, I tune out just a little bit. I did that. You know, you get depressed. You see the scores coming in. I did that a little bit over the weekend. Was there anything that was positive that was happening in those games where the Indians were basically shellacking the Cardinals?
Well, yeah, there weren't a lot of positive, I must say. I mean, Paul DeJong had a really good game in the final game against Cleveland. And, you know, the defense was, again, still not great. I still say the pitching's been good. I mean, overall, the pitching's been good. So you can kind of just generally say that. Now, there again, the Friday night game when, you know, there was nothing but hits and runs all over the place. I mean, you throw that one out and say that's just an aberration. But for the most part, I mean, the Cardinals still pitching well. They have the second-best earned run in average in the National League. Their starting rotation is strong. Daniel Ponce de León did not have a good start. He's not in the rotation. But Oviedo is a guy that when we've seen him, we've liked him. So I think that's probably the right move and a good move. And so top to bottom in the Cardinals' rotation, including the guy that's going today, Dakota Hudson, have all pitched well. Really, the few number of pitches per inning, they're getting deeper and deeper into games as they get more conditioned.
Yeah, so Dakota Hudson, his last outing, actually his last two outings were not that bad, but I don't think he won either one of those, did he?
He's 0-2 on the season, but he's actually had a good start every start. He started against these Reds. In fact, today's game is a rematch of two Fridays ago when the Reds were in St. Louis between Anthony DeSclafani and Dakota Hudson. Both guys pitched well. I wouldn't say great, but both pitched well, and they pitched into the fifth inning. At that time, Dakota Hudson really didn't have his pitch count up. So, you know, again, the start good, four and third innings for DeSclafani, and Dakota Hudson, again, it pitched well on the other side. And last time out, Hudson was able to go six innings and gave up just three hits and two runs. Got a no decision in that game also against the Royals. So the win-loss record's not what he wants, but certainly the other stats have been good for Dakota.
We got an Amarin pregame show coming up in less than an hour now. It's a 5:40 first pitch. You'll hear Rick on the broadcast tonight. Rick Horton, I appreciate it. Hopefully they can get things back on track, and that was a great victory yesterday. You know, the ebbs and flows happen in any baseball season, as you know, and you get a losing streak. It's just that it's so much more pronounced with the shorter season. You go into panic mode a little sooner.
Absolutely. You want it to flow as long as it can and ebb for a short time. That's what you hope for.
All right, take care, Rick.
I appreciate
you coming on here this afternoon. 3:47 on your home of the Cardinals, KMOX.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Cut of the day is sponsored this afternoon by the Good Feet Store Pain Relief and Comfort to fit any budget. I had no idea. I don't think a lot of people knew that Chadwick Boseman was ill. He had colon cancer for 4 years. He passed away on August 28th at just the age of 43 years old. He was probably best known for this, for Black Panther, right?
What's up? I never yielded. And as you can see, I am not dead.
You know, where I really loved him, though, where he came on my radar, he did a bunch of TV work. He was on Third Watch and a bunch of other children. I think he was even in some soap operas. But when he played Jackie Robinson at 42, I thought it was amazing.
You're getting close now, and the closer you get, the worse they'll be. Don't let them get to you.
I won't. God built me to last.
You know, that's ironic when you hear that. And I didn't think that movie was spectacular, but I did think that Chadwick Boseman's performance really stood out. Here is a local St. Louis actor looking back, Sterling K. Brown, at the life and his reflection of Chadwick Boseman.
Chad and I got a chance to work together on a couple of films, Marshall and Black Panther. And I didn't even actually have any scenes with him in Black Panther, but I had quite a few with him in Marshall. If still waters run deep, then Chadwick Boseman was a deep brother. Little did I know the whole time that I knew him that he was living with cancer. He was quiet, he was private, but he was still cool. There was a mutual respect and admiration and a willingness to share. And what I mean by that is I don't think either one of us were impeded by the idea that it was him or I. We knew that there was room for everyone to play and share together.
He was diagnosed in 2016. It progressed to stage 4 before this year. Chadwick Boseman, unfortunately dead at the age of 43. A sad passing over the weekend. That's your audio cut of the day.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.